Is Rome really named after Romulus?
Which European city is the hedge?
And why are Tokyo and Kyoto anagrams?
We'll check into Slavic suffixes, sink into some swamps, and find out what metropolis is made backwards in another global tour of city names on Words Unraveled.
Welcome to another Words Unraveled. I'm Rob Watts from the YouTube channel Rob Words.
And I'm Jess Zafaris, author of etymology books, including Useless Etymology. And today we are back with another globetrotting journey around city names.
Yes, we are city hopping to explore how various places you've heard of from around the world got the names that they have. We're going all over the shop with this one. We did another episode where we covered British and American cities, so we're going to largely steer clear of those this time. But don't worry, the rest of the world has plenty to offer.
Definitely. This is probably the second of multiple additional episodes. So if you don't hear your favorite city or the place where you're from, never fear, there are many more where that came from.
Who doesn't have a favorite city?
Wait, what is your favorite?
What is my favorite city?
Yeah. Well, do you have a favorite city?
I like Berlin, where I am now. But do you know what Berlin means, literally?
What does Berlin mean?
It's from an old Slavic word meaning swamp.
Swamp. Excellent. I love that. There are a number of cities like that, right?
Yeah, they don't always have flattering names, but you can tell that this place is really swampy. I mean, not if you're sort of just hanging around, you know, you're not constantly... But one of the things that really strikes you if you move to Berlin from anywhere else is that there are pipes everywhere sticking up and sort of going over the road, and anywhere there's a building site, a construction site, you have these huge pipes coming out of it. And it's because the land has to be drained if you want to build on it, because it is still so swampy.
Interesting. Yeah, it'll sink right in. That's kind of like New Orleans over here.
Another swamp.
Indeed. But how did it get a Slavic name?
Well, I mean, you'd be surprised, actually, because you think of Germany as being all German speaking, but actually, like Brandenburg, the area surrounding Berlin, still has a Slavic language that is spoken by not very many people, but it is still spoken, so-called Sorbian. And you know, it's right on the edge of Poland. Obviously, Poland is a Slavic speaking place. You know, we're in the region of the Slavs. There's some overlap between Germany and that. I can give you some more German place name origins if you're interested.
Yeah, let's do it.
So yeah, Berlin is a Slavic one. Yeah, but mostly they're not Slavic. Mostly they're a bit like English names insofar as their Germanic constructions. And actually, it's quite possible to translate German place names into English equivalents. For example, German place names that end with Dorf, the Dorf at the end of there is the same as the Thorpe at the end of English names. And the Berg at the end of names like Hamburg is the same as the Berry or Borough or Bruh at the end of English place names. I'm going to point you in the direction, and we'll show for our viewers this very thing, of a map where someone has carefully gone through all of the German place names and replaced them with what their equivalent would be if they were in England. Hamburg becomes Hambury. Frankfurt becomes Frankford, because the foot at the end of...
Not hamburger and hot dog.
No, exactly. That would be a better way to translate them. Yeah. Meat patty and sausage. No, Hambury and Frankford. Stuttgart becomes stud yard, as in like a yard for horses.
Horses,
that's what Stuttgart means. Mannheim becomes Mannheim. I love these. Really interesting one, because it speaks to the origin of the place name altogether, is Munich. So we call it Munich in English. And I just put on like a little German accent, as I said, I said Munich. But of course, in Germany, they don't call it Munich. They call it München.
Yeah.
München. Yeah, exactly. And that's because the old High German is München, right? Which is a cross between those two, basically. And then you've got these two different directions that that word has taken. One of them is Munich and the other one is München. But both of them ultimately mean the place of the monks. So there's this old English word. By old English, I don't mean capital O, capital E. I mean an old word that was used in English that was München, which actually meant more like an abbey.
Oh, neat. Yeah.
Nurses. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, for example, this map has Munich as Minchin, a bit like, you know, the comedian Tim Minchin.
Surely that's also cognate with the word monk, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's definitely related to it, for sure. Yeah. And then, you know, you've got Münster as well, which means the same as Minster, right? It's another place related to monks. Ultimately, a lot of these words come from the fact that monks are there. We don't have to go into the etymology of monks, do we? Maybe we should just mention it again. It basically means solitary one, right?
Yeah.
Related to that prefix mono. It's kind of unusual because you don't think, well, that's not a Germanic prefix. It's not, but anything related to Christianity, you know, you do end up having to look to the Mediterranean to find the origins of these words sometimes. Maybe that's the place we could go next, the Mediterranean.
Yeah, I was thinking that. So I'd say the most maybe historically significant areas in the Mediterranean are probably Athens and Rome, right?
Okay, so if you're going to do Rome, I've got a question here. So there is an origin story based around some twins.
Right? Yes.
What I want to know, and by the end of you explaining this, is whether or not the twins are named after the place or the place is named after the twins.
We don't know. And probably it's the other way around. So according to the founding myth, the name came from the city's founder and first king, Romulus. However, it is also possible that Romulus is derived from Rome itself. And the legend, just FYI, in case you are unfamiliar, is Romulus and Remus were twin sons of Mars, who were abandoned and saved by a she-wolf and grew to found Rome in 753 BC. And after a dispute over the city's location, Romulus killed Remus, becoming the sole ruler of the new city on Palatine Hill. As early as the 4th century, there have been a bunch of alternative theories proposed on the origin of the name Roma. One of them is that it's from an Indo-European root meaning to flow, in reference to the Tiber River. Another one says that it means something like strength city or hill city or something like that. And the city, you know, it does have seven hills. So any of those could be possible. There's also an option that it came from Etruscan and probably also connects to an early name for the Tiber River. But who knows? We don't. But probably, I think the more likely option is that Romulus is named after Rome, not Rome is named after Romulus.
And you get this so frequently with founding myths. You know, for example, Czechia, or what was previously known as the Czech Republic, Czechia. So the founding myth of Czechia is that there were three brothers, Czech, Lech, and Rus, right? And that they all go off in separate directions. One of them finds Czechia. One of them finds Poland. And the very famous Polish beer is called Lech. And the other one founds Russia. Those men from the myth are named after the countries rather than countries named after them.
Right.
But the founding myth is that the country is named after them. It's very confusing. But what I really like about the Rome one is you've got this weird situation where you've got Rome potentially being named after a man. And then you've got Romania, which is named after the Romans. So Romania is a country named after the people, named after the place, named after the person.
Little Roman nesting doll.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Russian dolls named after Rus.
Speaking of which, Athens also has a founding myth associated with Athena, but also is not from Athena. Athens comes from the ancient Greek word for Athens, which was Atenai, which is a plural form of an unknown word that comes from a language spoken in the region before Greek. There are about 1,000 words of Greek vocabulary that can't be fully explained as derivatives of Proto-Greek or Proto-Indo-European. So there's a hypothesis that there's a pre-Greek language that isn't related to either one.
Wow.
And it didn't always appear in the plural. So Athens it has an S at the end of it in English because it is plural. So early Greek poets, including Homer, used a singular form for the same place. And many Greek names are plural too, because like Thebes, because they originally referred to a collection of separate communities or villages or settlements that then merged into a single entity rather than one unified town. And that seems to be what happened with Athens. Early Greek uses the singular form for the place, and then later it became plural, and that became the standard name. The alternative hypothesis here here is whether the city took its name from the goddess Athena or the reverse, but it's the reverse. The goddess got her name from the city. And one of the reasons we know this is because that ending tends to appear in the name of locations, but it rarely appears in personal names. According to, do you know the founding myth of Athens?
I don't think I do.
So Athena competed with Poseidon for patronage of the city, and each of them gave the king Cecrops a gift. And he would decide which gift was better for the city. So Poseidon struck the ground with his trident and a saltwater spring springs up, which helps the make Athenians a sea power, but they couldn't drink the water because it's salt water. So Athena gives them the first domesticated olive tree, which gave them wood, oil, and food and became symbolic of Athenian prosperity.
That's nicer than sucking on the teat of a wolf.
Right.
That's the story of Rome I'm talking about. That's not just a phrase that I use.
Yes.
I'd never thought of those as being, as thieves and Athens as being plurals, but now obviously I'm going to. And it's funny that thing with Greek gods is it's so difficult to tell when either a place or a characteristic is named after the god or the god is named after the characteristic or the place.
Yes.
Is that what I mean? Nike? Is Nike one? Because N-I-K or Nike as well, that does mean victory in Greek, but does it mean victory because of Nike, or is Nike called Nike because they are the god of victory?
I would like to take us back to Czech with the name, the city name Prague, which is in Czech is Praha, which it's gone through a few rounds of speculation as to its origin. First, it was thought to mean threshold, and later that idea was revised to suggest it meant ford or rapid, and all of this seems to have had to do with its position as a crossing point on the Vltava River. More recently, it's almost the opposite. It's been proposed that it's from an old Czech verb praziti, meaning to burn, on the notion that the land was cleared by fire for a settlement, or maybe roasting in the sun, because there is a bit of like shale bedrock at the site of what is now Prague Castle, despite the fact that the climate there is actually quite temperate. It's also nicknamed the City of 100 Spires, based on account by the 19th century mathematician Bernard Bolzano, and today it's estimated to be at around 500. So I don't know if he's wrong or they got rid of some.
Just an exaggeration. Oh, you maybe just got to 400 and went, well, there's a lot of those.
Right.
So let's just round it up to the nearest big number. No one's ever going to count.
It's fine.
Wasn't counting on Jess the Faris turning up.
One of my favorite facts about Prague has nothing to do with the name of the city, but with the word defenestrate.
Yes, the defenestration of Prague. Yeah, it's definitely got something to do with the city.
I love that there are three defenestrations. Like, the only reason we have the word defenestration or defenestrate is because so many people got thrown out of windows in Prague.
You need a word for it. You can't just have the mass throwing out of windows of Prague, right?
There are three of these, and they're like 200 years apart. That's not true. The first one is like 200 years before the other ones. We didn't have the first defenestration called the first defenestration until the second defenestration, which was then revised into the 1.5 defenestration of Prague, because the third defenestration of Prague involved killing people. The second one entered like an era of peace, and then the first one and the third one issued in an era of war. So you have to kill people and you have to start a war if you're going to make it an official defenestration.
Okay. So it's actually a lot more than just throwing out of windows. Fascinating.
Oh yeah, it's a whole thing. This is very technical.
it's a whole thing in Prague. So I actually did do a little bit of research into Slavic place names. Specifically, like, I was wondering about the suffixes that you get in a lot of Slavic place names. So we're talking like Polish, Russian, Czech, but basically the whole of sort of Eastern Europe. You see the same sort of endings coming up. Like, so all the ovs, evs, yovs, ivs. So for example, like Kiev, Plovdiv in Bulgaria. So Kiev is obviously in Ukraine, they all mean the same thing, right? And they are just a possessive suffix, right? It just means belonging to. So Kiev means belonging to the stick. And no one knows why it means that, but it does. And Plovdiv is belonging to Philip. So it's actually invoking a Greek name for the place, which was Philippopolis, which meant Philip's town, basically. So that's what Plovdiv. But if it's got that if, that ev, that of at the end of it, it means it belongs to something, or as we would now phrase it, it is a place of something like that. You know how you can do possessive like that. Another possessive one is place names that end with sk or isk. For example, like Minsk in Belarus, which means belonging to the river Menka. And then you have Skaya as well, which is just a feminine form of that. It's not that the thing that it belongs to is feminine, but usually there would be like something after it, like square. The word square is feminine. So Skaya would go before the name of a square.
Excellent. Oh, that's cool.
And then Grad, people will be aware of, they'll have been aware of Leningrad, which was once the name of St. Petersburg, and Stalingrad, which is now known as Volgograd, but that just means town, right? What I didn't realize beforehand is that Gorod, like Nizhny Novgorod, that's just another sort of rendering of Grad.
Oh, no way.
Town. So Nizhny, so Nizhny means low. Nov, I think you could work out what the Nov in Novgorod means.
North?
New. Yeah.
New. That makes sense.
Like novel.
That makes more sense.
So Nizhny Novgorod means like low, new town. Yeah.
Where should we travel now? Should we stay in Europe or should we proceed elsewhere?
I've got a lot of European ones here. I had a good old look at Scandinavian ones. And I should mention the Dutch ones as well, because Dutch people are always getting in touch with us saying we're not giving the Dutch enough love. Actually, I'll do the Dutch now. So what does the dam in Amsterdam, Rotterdam, and Edam mean?
It means dam.
Yes, it means dam. It does. That tells you all you need to know about the landscape of the Netherlands, right? It's low. You need to take control of the water flow. So they have dams in a lot of these places. And usually you've got the name of the river before it. So Amsterdam is named after the river Amstel, as is the beer Amstel. But what's interesting about Amstel is what that means in turn, because you've got ama, which means current, which could mean river. And then a word that I recognize because it's the same in German, the German word Stelle means place, right? As in you put something in a place, like a position. That's a Stelle.
Water place.
Yeah.
River place.
It means water place.
So the
dam at water place.
So yeah. The Amstel River is the water place river or the river place river.
Yeah, we've got another one of those. Yeah. But Rotterdam's on the river Rotter. And Edam, the town that is made backwards, little joke for you, that's on the river Ee.
Is that the place famous for the cheese?
The cheese is indeed named after a cheese made backwards. There's a little joke for you to use at Christmas or around the dinner table. And then I also wanted to look up The Hague because I didn't know what The Hague means.
Yeah, and why is it the?
Yeah, it's really weird, isn't it? And why do we use the French name for it when we know that the Dutch for it is Den Haag? That's a Germanic name for it. So surely there is an English version of that name that we could be using instead of the French one. And there is, because if we were going to call it something English, we'd be calling it the whore, or as in H-A-W, or the hedge, because Den Haag means the hedge.
Ah, that's actually neat.
Yeah, I know. Who'd have thought? You just call it the hedge. What are you getting at? Well, it's actually short for an old name for it. I'm going to really struggle to pronounce this, but I'm going to have a go. It used to be called Schravenhage, right? Schravenhage. And that means the hedge of the count.
Huh. So it's like the hedge around a castle or something like that?
It's the hedge around the hunting grounds of Margrave Graven, right? This title that we don't have in English. We don't have in English, but count is a very close idea to it. So yeah, the Hague is actually the hedge.
How cool.
And then can I just do a quick nod to the Scandies while I'm at it? The ones that people will have heard of. So Copenhagen's an interesting one for us. I mean, it's not called Copenhagen in Danish. It's called Copenhagen. Right? It's spelled a bit differently. But it means merchant's harbor, and the Hagen, or Havn, which is spelled H-A-V-N in Danish, means the same as our word haven, and or once meant at least as in a port or a harbor, and indeed it is related to the word harbor. And then the Köpen is related to our word cheap, and the name Chapman, and it means shop or merchant.
Oh,
yeah. Huh. So it's
because it's a trading center.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. That. Stockholm's a bit of a strange one. Have you been to Stockholm?
I have not.
I think what a lot of people don't know about Stockholm until they go there is that it's just made up of tons and tons of islands. Absolutely loads of them. It's 14 islands make up the sort of the city, but actually the larger conurbation is made up of thousands. The Stockholm archipelago is made up of thousands of islands.
Wow.
And Holm means island. So it's a little bit confusing insofar as that's just a reference to one island. So hopefully the stock bit's going to help us understand why it's like that. It's not. No one knows what the stock bit.
A couple of
theories, right? One of them is that it means log island because there are a lot of forests there and it was a very good place to get timber from. But there's another school of thought that means that says that the stock comes from a Swedish word for a bay, which would make it Bay Island, which is an incredibly boring explanation, but might also be true. And then I should mention Oslo next. Oslo being the capital of Norway, but another one people don't really know what it means. Like the Oz bit, well, yeah. So it might mean estuary from the Old Norse for estuary, but the low bit. So the theory that was doing the rounds for a long time was that it meant the estuary of the River Low. The problem is there is no River Low.
Okay.
And the first time there is any reference to the River Low is in an explanation of what Oslo means. So whoever was explaining it basically invented the River Low to fit with their description of what the name Oslo means. So actually, it's a bit of a mystery, Oslo.
This is total speculation with absolutely no grounding behind it, but I wonder if perhaps that could have come from like an indigenous language or something like that that existed before. I don't know.
Like a Sami.
Yeah, language, something like maybe. That.
Although I think there are enough Sami around for someone to say, oh, yeah, it's actually.
Yeah,
it's
you would think.
And also, it's very far south, Oslo. So.
So probably less likely.
It's more sort of Norse territory than. Well, actually, that sounds like a real political banana skid. But you would expect it to have an Old Norse name rather than a Sami one, I think.
Could I drag us down to a much farther south location with a Germanic name, which would be Johannesburg in South Africa? We're going back to West Germanic languages. Right. It's really interesting. So it's South Africa's largest city. It's on a high plateau. The city that we know now began in 1886 after prospectors discovered gold on the Witwaters Rand, which is this long ridge of gold-bearing rock. And it means White Waters Ridge in Afrikaans, which is a Germanic language. It's very similar to Dutch. Well, it has a lot of similarities with Dutch, but it's also influenced by local languages too. And so there was a huge amount of migration and mining investment there. But who is Johannes is the question, or Johannes, because, yeah. In English we say typically Johannesburg, but it is Johann or Johannes. So there was a Johann Risik. There was a Johann Joubert. These were members of a delegation that were sent to England to obtain mining rights for the area. Joubert had a park in the city named after him, and then Risik has his name for one of the main streets in the city where the historically important but dilapidated Risik Street post office is located. Johann Meyer was yet another local administrator, and then another one was Stephanus Johannes Paulus Kruger, better known as Paul Kruger, president of the South African Republic from 1883 to 1900. So we don't know.
Maybe it was all of them. Maybe they just named it so it just it'll keep lots of people happy.
It's close enough. We didn't use their family names, so that way we can keep it nice and vague. But the Zulu and Xhosa name for the area is Egoli, which means place of gold.
Okay, and so that I'm sorry about the pronunciation. This Witwatersrand, something along those lines,
yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. White waters. That's actually the rand at the end of there is where the name of the currency comes from.
Oh, excellent. That's cool.
Yeah. It's specifically that valley. Because it's such a great place to source precious metals. While we're in Africa, have you got any more for us?
I have a number if you would like.
I would.
Let's see. Lagos is in southwestern Nigeria. It's one of the largest cities in Africa. Or Lagos is typically how it's pronounced. But before European contact, the area was settled by the Awori people who spoke Yoruba. And they called it Eko. It means farmed or fortified homestead in Yoruba, and it is still a nickname for Lagos. Lagos.
Yeah, we talked about that os sound and an American struggle.
Yeah.
And they speak English there. It's worth pointing out, you know, that in Nigeria. So there's quite a well established sort of English language pronunciation of the place name. That's why we're quibbling it.
But the place name is a Portuguese word for lakes after the port city in southern Portugal, which served as a base for Atlantic exploration.
So would that make it Lagos instead if it was
entirely
Portuguese?
Possibly.
We're pronouncing it like it's Spanish,
right?
It's actually Portuguese, but really it's Nigerian. Confusing. There is a massive lake there, by the
yeah,
way.
there is.
Although I think it's technically a lagoon.
Yeah, it is.
I think it might
is
technically be a lagoon. Are the words lagoon and Lagos,
oh my God,
lake related? They have to be, right?
It's got to be, right? Let's find out. Yeah, it's got to be.
So we're splitting unnecessary hairs when we delineate between lakes and lagoons.
Let's see, there's Cairo, capital city of Egypt. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's Al-Qahira in Arabic, which means the conqueror or the victorious, which was from the Fatimid dynasty, which founded a capital after conquering Egypt there. And their caliph ruled in North Africa at the time and authorized Cairo as the political center of the dynasty. The name was given by the Fatimid dynasty, and the builders called it Al-Qahira, which means the vanquisher or the conqueror. And then
that's interesting.
Medieval writers incorrectly linked the name to Mars, who is also called the vanquishing or victorious star. So it's not related to Mars. It's the conquerors from the dynasty, but not the conquering star.
What's interesting there is that it comes with a definite article that we don't use in English. We just call it Cairo, right? But I have noticed that in French, it's called Le Caire.
Oh.
With a definite article, which would perhaps be a more accurate direct translation of the Arabic.
I'm surprised that we did not keep the L on there, because we often do when we borrow words from Arabic.
Well, it's interesting that we've got that O sound at the end of it. We must have got Cairo via somewhere else, right? That can't have been an English rendering of that word.
I can see it being that. I mean, we're really bad at transliterating Arabic.
Okay, so yeah, we could have just done a terrible job of it. Yeah.
Egyptian also has a variation that's like Kiro or something like that. So it could be.
Okay. Yeah, so maybe we've actually taken it from a slightly different source.
This appears to be a combination of standard Arabic and Egyptian words, and the original Egyptian word is said to mean place of combat too. So we've got two different meanings here. We've got like the victorious, the strong city, and then we've got this place of combat word that kind of smashed together, which is a little more similar to the English word.
I think there was some intrigue in there somewhere.
There's Kinshasa, which is the capital of the Democratic Republic of Congo. This one's kind of neat. Before European colonization, the site was occupied by Teke and Humbu communities. And one village on the site was called Inshasa. It's a reference to the salt trade there. It means a bag of salt in a combination of Kikongo and Kihumbu languages. And then in 1881, it was renamed Leopoldville by Henry Morton Stanley, a Welsh journalist who also became known for that trade. Stanley named the city for Leopold II, a Belgian monarch.
I mean, one of the things that we know about Leopold and the Belgians is they were kind of particularly horrible colonialists.
Exactly. They controlled the Congo Free State as a colonial possession for quite some time.
I know. I saw sort of, you know, those in glass houses, but they were, I think they're, you know, reputedly particularly bad, the Belgians.
But the city was renamed Kinshasa in 1966 after the movement for independence from Belgium, and the prefix which is tacked onto Nshasa, means a hill or an inhabited area. So it's basically a city or hill or habitation of salt.
Right.
There was also another suggestion that it could mean a place of exchange. The idea here is that Bateke fishermen who traded fish with locals along the riverbank called it a word in Teke, which would be sort of like Intsaya, which then was influenced by Kikongo into Kintsaya and then Kinshasa by combining it with Nshasa.
I do know one. Capital of Somalia, Mogadishu. I actually don't know what it means.
Oh.
What I do know is that it means exactly the same as Madagascar.
Yeah.
Because Madagascar is accidentally named after Mogadishu.
Oh, it's from the Arabic Muqaddas, meaning holy.
Oh, there you go. Okay, so it means holy place.
Another Arabic named African city is Khartoum. The origin of it is unclear, but it's often said that it is derived from an Arabic word, so it's maybe an Arabic word, and it's Khurthum, which is a word for an elephant's trunk or hose, which is probably referencing the shape of a little narrow strip of land extending between the blue and white Niles, which is cool. But the more likely theory is probably that it is an Arabic twisting of a Dinka word, meaning a place where rivers meet, which would also be accurate for the Dinka homeland in central Sudan, which is around present-day Khartoum.
Yeah, this is a thing that sometimes happens, isn't it? That native names get sort of distorted to fit another language. I talked about how, for example, York became known as Jorvorwijk to the Anglo-Saxons because they thought that it meant place of the boar, but it didn't mean place of the boar, but they made it turn into that. But actually, there's a better example that I spotted during my research, and that is Bordeaux in France, where you get that delicious, delicious wine. You know, they have a whole massive wine museum there.
I didn't, but that's not surprising.
I don't know if you can see the picture I've got on the wall over there. I'm not sure if it's in shot. Perhaps it isn't, but it's a massive poster about wine that I got in Bordeaux. You don't have to have a firm grip on French to know that Bordeaux quite elegantly breaks down into the words bord, meaning like coast or side or border, and eau, meaning waters, and to know that it's got the river flowing through it, big river as well. And you think, oh, okay, so it's so named because it's on the side of the river. But actually, that isn't the case. It's got an old ancient name along the lines of Bordeaux. I can't call it to mind right now, but because of the same phenomenon as you were talking about possibly having happened with Arabic and Khartoum, the name has been adapted folk etymologically to be the same as the French words for side of the waters, because it is at the side of the waters and it sounds a bit like sides of the waters. So now it's pronounced and spelt that way.
Our linguistic buzzword for that one is phonosemantic matching.
Ooh, I like that. Phonosemantic.
I think we addressed that on another episode, but it's also called like folk etymology, where the assumed origin of a word influences its spelling or usage or definition.
Phono, sound, semantic meaning, matching sound and meaning.
That's similar to Paris, right?
Parrots. Oh,
Paris. No, not parrots.
Parrots are terrible for photosemantic matching.
Though parrots are all named after, if I recall correctly, we will have to do this on a different episode, but I think it's from, like, it means like Peter.
They're from
it's like a variation on the French.
Yeah, Pierrot.
Right?
Pierrot. Yeah, it's a cute version of Pierre. Parakeet as well.
Speaking of France, Paris, it gets its name from the Parisi, a Gallic tribe who inhabited the area along the Seine until like the 3rd century BCE or around the 3rd century BCE. The Romans recorded the settlement as being named Lutetia Parisiorum in the 1st century BCE in the writings of Julius Caesar, which means basically the swamp or marsh of the Parisi people. And then the earlier name, Lutetia, is from a Celtic root that means marsh or swamp. Again, swamp or marsh of these people. And then it was just shortened to Paris.
So continental Europe's two most powerful capitals are both just swamps.
Before we got to Paris, it was also called Parisian for a while. The people who are called the Parisi have a little bit of an uncertain origin themselves. It's thought to come from a root meaning cauldron, the idea being like a vessel or group identity centered around shared resources. And then another possibility is that it means either makers, commanders, or spear people.
Like Franks, right? Like doesn't Frank means potentially spear people as well, doesn't it?
I think we did come to
Oh gosh, whatever. Can I make an observation? It's just one of those things that once you notice it, you go, oh gosh, that is so strange. In English, Marseille is very often spelt with an S at the end of it for no obvious reason. In French, it is not.
What does it mean?
It's just a French adaptation of the old name for it, the name that the Greeks ultimately gave it, which is something like Marcellas. I can't quite call it to.
Oh, so it could be like a holdover from that.
Yeah, absolutely. It could be. I think that's giving us quite a lot of credit, though. I don't know. But I noticed it when I was waiting at the airport to fly there because my wife is from Marseille. And I noticed that on the English departure board, it had an S at the end of it. But when I got to France, it no longer had that S.
Weird.
Wow, we've gone pretty deep on Europe and Africa.
We have.
I can mention one or two more European ones. Reykjavik's a fun one. It means Smoky Bay.
Ooh, so that's called, nice. But
yeah, because the person who first got there, because you know, the thing about Iceland is it's basically on fire all of the time. It's highly volcanic. And so you do have like what looks like smoke emerging from the ground all over the place.
It's like a very attractive Mordor.
That's what struck the first person to sort of arrive there and note down what it looked like. And it's been called Reykjavik for a long time. It was a very small settlement to start with. It's now a settlement of, I got to guess, about 150,000 people, which is not huge for a capital city, but is by far the biggest settlement in Iceland. I went to an Icelandic city a couple of years ago that I think it had fewer than 40,000 people there or something like that. It was really small.
A lot of people pass through there though, right? Because the airport in Reykjavik is often visited on the way across the pond.
Yeah, it's a very good stop-off point if you're traveling transatlantic, yeah.
I got stuck there for like 16 hours one time. It does not have any comfortable places to sit.
yeah. We got lucky actually when I went there because one of the volcanoes right near the airport started to erupt.
Did you see it from the plane?
Oh yeah, we did. It was fantastic. That's so cool. See the glowing lava. I mean, you know, there weren't lava flows, no pyroclastic or whatever you say. None of that business. But it did cause problems. Like there are places where you can go and bathe in waters heated by the volcano. There's a massive place right near the airport, actually the most famous place there is where all the influencers go, but they had to shut that, which was obviously hilarious. Why is misfortune for influencers always hilarious? It just was.
He said as an influencer.
I'm not influencing anybody.
You're influencing our the expansion of our minds.
Trying to. I'm just having a look at populations of Icelandic cities. So actually Reykjavik is 125,000 thereabouts. And then the next biggest is 35,000. So when I said there was a city of 40,000, there isn't one of 40,000. I was overestimating its size. They're even smaller than that. I mean, Iceland's fantastic. Drive around Iceland and you look at the signs and you just feel like you're observing what our language could have been if no one had interfered with it. It's incredibly conservative, the Icelandic language. And you can see the relations between the Icelandic words and English. And they've got those beautiful letters as well. They've got thorn and they've got ed in their language. And they've got that AE thing, all these things that used to be in English. Yeah, I like Iceland.
I read once that Iceland is home to more authors per capita than any other country in the world. I guess if your house is potentially next to a volcano, just write, stay inside and write.
Get it down. What's that other? There's a similar fact, isn't there, about Belgium? Belgium having more cartoonists per capita than any other country.
Oh,
or is
really?
It any other country? Or is it Japan? I think it might even be more than Japan.
Wow. Oh, man.
Should we go to Japan next?
We should go to Japan.
There's some really interesting stuff going on in Japanese city names. tell us about Tokyo.
The city was originally called Edo, which was written with characters meaning river, inlet, and entrance, which described its location where the river is met by the bay and the tidal flats and everything. And Edo became the city of the Tokugawa Shogunate, the military government from like 1603 to 1868. And the emperors continued to reside in Kyoto, which was, this is a little convoluted here, which then was a political authority operated from Edo through the shogun. And then in 1868, there was the Meiji Restoration, which abolished the shogunate and then restored the governing power to the emperor. And the emperor relocated from Kyoto to Edo, which made it the center of the imperial administration. And the city was renamed Tokyo, meaning Eastern Capital, to mark its position east of Kyoto, the former capital.
So the fact that Tokyo and Kyoto are anagrams of one another is not entirely coincidental, because the Kyo means capital. So Tokyo means eastern capital and Kyoto means capital city.
Yes.
So there is a city in Japan called Capital City that is not the capital.
Right. And it's the and the capital is the east is east of the capital.
Yeah, that's confusing. Although that's a bit like Beijing. So Jing in Beijing means capital as well. And so Beijing is northern capital and Nanjing is southern capital. But obviously Beijing is the capital, Peking as once known. But
yeah, we had trouble spelling that one for a while.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not even that like Beijing and Peking are different words. They're just alternative English, and yeah, really English renderings of the same Chinese words. And this sort of new regime is quite an important part of, yeah, the post-revolutionary China's way of Chinesifying things. It's by getting rid of what was a very sort of English, Anglophone imposed way of transliterating Chinese, Mandarin specifically.
The current romanization system that they use is called Pinyin, and that gave us the modern spelling Beijing, but we still have like the airport code there is still P-E-K and things like that. So
it's still called Pekin in French as well. I mean, it's not been changed in all of the languages. I could briefly mention some more Chinese ones. I would like to go back to Japan though, because there's something I noticed about Japanese place names today. I don't mean I've discovered something, I just something I noticed for myself. So Shanghai means on top of the sea. Hai means sea. So when you see Hai, it'll be somewhere coastal. There's something for you. And then you've got Chongqing, this vast, vast city. The biggest city you haven't heard of, basically, if you've never heard of Chongqing. It's enormous. I have been, actually. I would say not a lot of Westerners go to Chongqing because it's not a very obvious touristy place. There's over 30 million people in Chongqing. It is enormous. And it means double celebration, which is quite cool. Supposedly because one of the emperors...
Oh, that's very neat.
Yeah, because one of the emperors was honored there before he'd actually ascended to the throne. So they had a double celebration. They had the celebration there. And then they had the actual celebration for his enthronement, which is kind of cool.
That's it.
And then Chengdu, which people will know most probably because that's where they have the cute pandas, the zoo. I say Chengdu, I think it's pronounced Chengdu. When you see Eng in Mandarin, it's actually an ung sound. And that means becoming capital. So becoming a capital. It's actually the capital of Sichuan province. Or, you know, when you have Sichuan chicken?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's Sichuan, which means mm-hmm. four rivers. So it means four, and Chuan bit means rivers. There you go. That's just dabbling with some Chinese, some Mandarin.
Another one named after, well, a body of water, sort of, is Hong Kong, which is, I mean, it's special administrative region versus city. It means fragrant harbor, and that's after the fragrance is probably after the agarwood trees there.
Historically, a couple of places that Americans will be very aware of, certainly in Japan, are Hiroshima and Iwo Jima. When I was talking about my little discovery, it was just that Shima and Jima are the same word. They're the same, as much as you can call them a word, they're the same element, meaning island. Jima means island. Shima means island. What it is there's this phenomenon in Japanese called rendaku, which involves the changing of consonant sounds. So if they become part of a compound, an unvoiced consonant becomes a voiced one. So that's how you get from Jima to Shima, right?
Ah.
And so Hiroshima means broad island, and then Iwo Jima means sulfur island. But here's another thing that's interesting. Iwo Jima isn't called Iwo Jima anymore. In 2007, they changed its name to Iwo To,
which
it still means sulfur island. And the To, the symbol for To in Japanese writing, is exactly the same as for Jima and Shima. So the name hasn't changed written down. It's just changed in how they say it, which I think is really interesting.
Osaka is named after a big hill.
How is it?
Yes, indeed. It means big hill. Well, large or great hill. Mm-hmm.
Osaka's weirdly, it's fun. It's weirdly sort of grubby for a Japanese city. I think it's known as quite a sort of, what's the way to describe it? And the people there are a bit different. They're definitely less polite than they are in the rest of Japan. I'm going to stick my neck out and say that. In Osaka, it's like a merchant's city traditionally, and it's just a bit rougher around the edges, a bit more edgy in itself, particularly in comparison with Kyoto, which is the tidiest place you'll ever go in your life.
Interesting. That's cool.
Osaka was the one place I got annoyed when I was in Japan. I was so used to good service and politeness, and then I got to Osaka.
Huh.
And yeah.
I have heard the food is fantastic there, which...
Oh, yeah. It is, yeah, a lot of fried stuff. Okonomiyaki, that's the best thing. Yeah, it's like this sort of pancake made with cabbage and with this sauce over the top of it. I crave it so often, and it's very hard to find. It's probably fashionable somewhere, but it's not very easy to find in Berlin.
Excellent.
We've digressed quite far, haven't we?
We have. And we have filled up our time, I think, too.
Yeah, I think we have. I worry about how many different cultures we've offended on our little world tour here, but we mean well. We mean well.
Yeah, we'll have to end our globe trotting here and return for another round where we can perhaps visit some of our neglected continents. We didn't get to South America. We didn't get to Oceania, and we have plenty of regions we skipped and continents we were on.
Yeah, we should cover India as well. There's a lot going on mm-hmm. with Indian place names, though. It's well worth the mention. We'll do that next time. Maybe not on the next episode of Words Unraveled, but we'll do it again soon, promise.
We'll see you next time.
Take care.